Yeah, got it.
Okay, perfect. So how do you like to be referred to, Ash, or is it Ashoki? Like I was
Ash is preferred.
Ash.
Some of my publications are actually in the name of my short form of my long name. It's Ash. And I'm known in my work, at my work and different places as Ash. So I prefer as Ash. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. And that's how when I'm writing the article, I'll put that in there. So, Ash, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what it is that you do?
Thank you, Kelly. It's a nice morning. I came to Canada in 2008 and completed my postgrad health informatics certification from George Brown College. Then I completed my co-op from Canadian Institute for Health Information. Then I worked for NRCC. Then I moved to Michael Garron Hospital. Interestingly, weeks before I joined with Ontario Health, the ministry job as a lead of performance accountability and funding allocation. So in my years of work, I got the chance to see a lot of opportunities to grow and work on different health information related activities, and most specifically, health data that I feel and I'm passionate about it. I contributed, I learned, and I'm still doing. That's it.
I think you're the second person that I've interviewed now from George Brown. I'm a George Brown alum. I went there
Okay.
for my initial nursing. So it's nice to meet a fellow George Browner.
That's good.
So what inspired you to get into this field?
So to take one step back, if we talk about this health information, there is a pyramid called DIKW. It's called Data, Information, Knowledge, and Wisdom that leads to decision. So in health information or health sector, if you want to make any decision, you need to know your data. So being a public health specialist, and once upon a time I was a healthcare professional. So I was curious, I was intrigued about health information. So then I felt like I'm more interested about data. Data is actually the atom of any kind of decision-making process. So like atom is the molecule that builds all the matters, and data builds all the information, knowledge, and wisdom. And ultimately, this is a decision-making process. So that actually took me to the base of the entire process improvement in health sector in the country or in the province. So health information is so interesting in terms of work and so much to do. That drew my attention, and I spend a lot of time in education. Later, I actually did my master's degree in health informatics from University of Toronto, and I still find this is quite interesting nowadays, and a lot of things to do.
When you say a lot of things to do, what can you unpack that for us in terms of, where you see the data now and where you think it can go?
So in terms of health data, so it starts with a patient visit to a health service provider. It could be primary care physician, it could be a hospital. In our country or in our province, interoperability, then data processing, availability of data, automation, decision-making process, there are so many things not well connected, and there are so many places that you get not a lot of information. I can give you an example. Like in our provincial system, you can see your CT or MRI wait time by a specific health service provider, but not for like if someone needs mammography or bone scan that he cannot do because not a lot of data available. So the process started many years ago. Data collection started many years ago, but we didn't reach there to give this information to the public to make system more functional. So that's the reason we have a lot of scope to improve and a lot of scope to work, actually. So that's interesting.
Yeah, you raise a very good point. It almost seems like there's pockets of information that the public on the front side is able to see, but nothing links back together. For example, so here in Alberta, maybe over the last year and a half, the health system implemented something called Connect Care, which
Connected
is
care, yeah.
meant to connect. Right, you know, your health information, your health data across the province. You know, and I, in speaking with other health information professionals such as yourself, one of the things that comes up is that it's great interprovincially to have that, but what about, you know, Canada-wide? So if I'm here in Alberta, I, you know, come to Toronto to visit, you know, friends and family, and I break my leg, and then, you know, I'm treated, and then I come back here. That information, it doesn't, you know, I can't log into my computer and say, oh, Kelly broke her leg, let's see what happened. You know, it almost seems like the data and the information and the system is in place for that to happen, but it hasn't reached that point yet. Do you ever see it getting to that point?
Yeah, I mean, I see there are a lot of information that you can access to, and sometimes you cannot. Like if you take a visit to your hospital, and nowadays in most of the hospitals, you can see your health information or health records. You can download it, you can share with your primary physician. Primary physician can get access to your health information from the labs and from the hospitals. But if you go out of the province and beyond the circle of the connection, it is sometimes difficult. I went to a ski resort years ago to Barrie, not very far from here, where I live in Toronto. So, the Aurelia Soldier Memorial Hospital treated me for my broken wrist on my right hand. But when I came back to home, my hospital didn't get that information. So before I come, I wanted to make sure that my hospital will get things. So I asked all this information in a format that they can read. So it was not online connection, it was offline something I brought the X-rays and their treatment note on a paper and digital copy of the X-ray. So this is something improving nowadays. It's not a lot of improvement. There are a lot of things to do. Few things are improved a lot, but it's only a little portion where we want to go. Let's say, for example, if you by person, most probably less than 50% of our expectations are met so far. So we need to do a lot about health information and health informatics to reach the patients. I sometimes do not say patients because nowadays doctors' interaction or hospital interaction not only with the disease, there are other conditions when pre-disease condition some people need to see, like vaccination. It's not for the patients, it's for healthy persons. So interaction with the family physician or interaction with the hospital or with the community service provider is a continuous process with every citizen of the country. So system, our health information system should be rich enough or there should be enough capability to reach each and every person in the country in a way so that they can get access to their own information and they can get access to healthcare provider whenever they need it, when they need
You raise a good point, and I think we saw a lot of that when COVID hit, and with the well, not when COVID hit specifically, but with the vaccinations, right? You know, each province had a system of being able to say, here's how you get, you know, here's how you get your COVID immunization record, but it didn't translate. So, you know, when things opened up and we were able to travel, and then different provinces wanted you to prove, you actually had to download a paper copy initially. And then they finally came out with a QR code. So, you know, you're right, there is a lot of work to do when it comes to accessing health information, I think not only provincially, but across the board. Tell me a little bit about your tenure with the National Research Corporation.
Yeah, National Research Corporation Canada is now defunct in Canada. It's not existing, but it was interesting place to know. When I realized that I was working for Canadian Institute for Health Information, then I realized I am interested to listen to patients' voice. So then I moved to NRCC. That's actually a survey company used to take patients' voice in a paper format. So that time, the hospitals used to contact NRC or NRCC. There are some service contracts and service accountability agreement. So the company was responsible for sending service to the patients and compile their responses and create reports. So there, I was responsible for capturing all patients' survey responses. So that time, I got the chance to work on some interesting project from paper-based to digitization or computer systems, so that all the paper-based surveys are coming. It will go directly to the computer, so that it was a manual process before. So it was improved. I was responsible for making sure that everything coming in a paper format and then goes to the computer system very efficiently within short period of time. Interesting project. I work with external vendors to improve that process, and the turnaround time was reduced a little bit. So what happened, you can understand even a nurse. So when the patient discharges from a hospital, so that survey contract was monthly basis survey. So for an annual contract, every time a patient is discharged, after the end of the month, it is sending out. So if a patient is discharged from a hospital, say for example, first of a month, that patient will get the survey next month, 30 of even sometimes it's 40 days, because the processing of information takes a bit of time, a couple of weeks time. So by the time some patients forget what was their interaction with the hospital or something. So that was a long process. Now it is delayed, and now it is very live almost. The hospitals are working with another company. They are taking information because of the data process has improved, and they are sending the service almost the end of every day. So it's reduced from 6 weeks to 1 day. It took over a decade of time, but it is there, and patients are responding very well. And patients' voices are so important for the hospitals, for the ministry, and for the decision makers, everyone. So if a patient can give perfect response to the hospital or their service provider, that is helping us with the data people like me to create some ideas or create some information, data transformation to information, then knowledge, then wisdom, and then it goes to the decision makers. They can work on it to improve the services so the patients get better service.
I love that. I love the idea of giving patients surveys to complete when they, because you're right, you know, the patient's voice is very important, and it's not always heard, I think. And so if we can get, you know, and it's astounding that you're getting really good feedback in terms of these surveys, because in my mind, I think, oh, you know, after I take my car in, right, and I get a survey, and I'm like, am I going to complete it? But I think you're right. It's very important to have these this information so that patients, well, not patients, so that the health systems can make changes that are meaningful to patients and not just meaningful to the system, right? Talk about CiHI. So, I'm fascinated about the way that CiHI works, insofar as when I was working in the hospital, we would obtain information that we would de then report to CiHI, but I never know what happens to that information. So I'm glad I have you on the line here to talk a little bit about when all that information comes in from each individual hospital. What happens?
CiHI is actually a federally mandated independent organization. So by saying federally mandated, it means all the hospitals do have some responsibility to submit their report, submit their data to CiHI's system. And CiHI is the place for getting any kind of information or detailed data for your decision-making process. Ministries, HQO, or any other like ICES, like all the universities, all the major organizations, they get national level data or information from CiHI. So it's a huge organization, and in terms of technology, in terms of data modeling, in terms of data analysis, in terms of transferring data to information and giving back to people, they work a lot. And I was part of a few projects, handful of projects in my short period of time. But if I were successful in my career, I would say CiHI is the holy grail of my career. It's such a great organization and such a great place to learn, work, and understand the Canadian health system and the decision-making process. I can give you an example. Like, have you heard the name of a database system called DAB, Discharge Abstract Database? So they get information. I mean, CiHI has many databases. DAB is one of the most important, more than 30 or 35 or 40 databases. At the time when I was there, it was 27 databases. So the hospitals across the country, they submit their data, discharge data from inpatient to CiHI, and they create their own style of, I mean, data repository in their system. And that's been used by many organizations and also CiHI itself to create different types of reports. So I worked with one of the reports called, I worked with many projects actually with CiHI. So one of the reports is how many mothers are giving multiple births. Quite interesting. So then I worked with another project called Down Syndrome Project, how many mothers are giving birth to Down syndrome. In medical term, it's called trisomy 21. And one of the projects quite interesting was when I was working with the university's PhD candidate. That was published. It's about when a patient is in accident, it's a decision-making, and it was considered as a decision-making process. When a person is in accident, paramedics take a decision based on closeness of their hospital and if they need to do tracheostomy or not, based on the time frame of 15 minutes. So if the hospital is within 15 minutes, they take it to the hospital for tracheostomy, and if it is more than 15 minutes, they do it on site because of to save patient's life. That's a decision-making process. In many cases, that PhD candidate from the University of Toronto, she found that sometimes it's not that's the way it works. Sometimes they think this is 15 minutes, but in actual time period, it takes more time. Because of that time, 15 minutes was straight line distance. So she came up with an idea, it should be the driving distance. So it was not in their process. So I helped her how to create the drive distance. I'm talking about 2010, Drive distance just came in at that time. The GPS system and online process is just maturing. There are many options, but you can select of your own how long will it go. But in a decision-making process, I was given 335,000 pairs of postal codes to find out the distance between two sets of postal codes. And it was not that easy for that PhD candidate. So I worked with her and gave some insight. And I learned a lot that the distance had some curve on the earth, that is also in consideration. But that time it was not in consideration, the drive distance. So I gave her that information, the way we can do drive distance in a larger scale for policymaker. And it was highly appreciated. I submitted that paper to Global SaaS conference. It was about 3,000 participants, and it was highly appreciated. After submission of this, after publication of that article, I got more than 30 hits from different public health schools for that idea. How do you do that? How did you come up with that idea? And how did you solve that problem in a larger scale? In a single point, it was at that time. Now we have many systems in place so that we can do that, but at that time it was not. But the idea was very highly appreciated. And I have no idea how many patients got the benefit of that process, but I'm sure idea-wise that's good. So Kaihai is a place where you can get a lot of data support, a lot of analytical steps you can do. So if I say data is the molecule of any decision process, then Kaihai is the place to get the molecule of information system, for especially health information system. They have the molecules of all these information process for making any decision across the country. I mean, higher level, national level information, they have it, but you can slice it down to your system as well. Like if you are working in the primary care physician, if you're in a hospital, you can slice it down to that level too. And sometimes we need some information from specific geographic area that can be drilled down using a postal code system, and they have economic, it can be connected to other system data like what is called Quintet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like for economic data, like the income level data that can be connected to postal code. Privacy is always in discussion. So this system never crosses that red line. So it's very well protected. And Kaihai has all those details of that molecules, and they have right kind of tools. They have right kind of process, and they publish it regularly whenever they complete a project. I appreciate, I feel good that I work for that organization.
Yeah, it sounds like a great organization. Again, you know, I've only dealt with Kaihai from a very removed stature, you know, collecting the data that they needed for length of stay or, you know, transition, like where are patients
transitioning? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but never really knowing, other than here's the information, what happens to it at the end. Does Kaihai ever make recommendation, or is it strictly here's all the data that we have, we're submitting it now federally for you to do, for the federal eyes to do with it what it needs to do, I suppose?
I worked there for a short time with a limited capacity. I cannot make any comments about their mission, vision, or activities, but I have seen they create reports and make their comments or any kind of recommendation in a subtle way, because that's the organization they analyze, they give the information. Recommendation is a bigger process that involves many other process, many other system involvement. Like if somewhere some group of patients are getting delayed to the hospital. That's a wait time part one. It's not very easy to measure. So if there is any transportation problem or not, that kind of information may not be available in their system. So they create report within their boundary. They come up with ideas within their boundaries, but bigger process, bigger system is a cross-system process. Like health system is not a standalone process. It has linked to economy, it has linked to transportation, it has linked to social matters. Like it could be connected to many things. So the Canadian Health Information System only connects to their repository, data repository. And if you see any report, you'll find nice visuals, nice findings. The findings are there. I mean, it creates the right kind of information, right kind of knowledge, and right kind of wisdom. But I am not sure about if it goes up to the decision level. But that's because that's a more of higher level job to do based on their information.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. So as an active member, I understand, of the Utilization Managers Network of Ontario, what initiatives or collaborations have you found the most impactful?
UMNO is quite interesting place where I attended all the meetings for the last many years, and information sharing, like what one hospital or one region is doing, how I can apply that in my work area. So I was mostly the consumer of all those learnings from different places. Contribution wise, I had only a little bit when I was working for quality-based procedure clinical definition for the hospital. So UMNO is a place where all the data managers come together to discuss the system level information sharing and the hospital level information sharing. Like mostly how they improve their process, they share their good practices in their work area. So I was mostly the consumer, and it's a great platform. And with that platform, we can connect to each other. We can share our success, share our hurdles, and improve our own area of work. I like that group.
Perfect. Thank you. So what do you think is the biggest challenge facing performance management in healthcare today, and how can we overcome those?
That's a good question. We measure performance based on set indicators. So the indicators are based on availability of the data. So with current system, when we are talking like post-COVID era, like COVID has given us a lot of learnings and system improvement. In this year, like now it's 2024, if you think about what happened in the past, we have lots of data available, but calculation and that kind of application into the system for indicator calculation, a lot. I think we need to go further. I would find the most deficiency in performance measurement or hospital performance or any healthcare provider performance is about automation process. There are a lot of things still manual. It could be automated, a lot of things, so that persons like us can explain things. So in terms of performance measurement, I would say we need more structured, more readily available data, more accessible data, and more automation. All these are actually, it's coming up. It will take time. It's coming. I see that system is stepping forward one after another. And we are at a point that we are looking into that interoperability, accessibility to data, and automation process. So when we reach, I don't know when, it's not tomorrow, but will happen in future, if not months, then within years' time it will happen. So accessibility of data and automation process, these are the most important part we need to do.
Do you see artificial intelligence playing a role in the interoperability and the automation of data, information in healthcare?
Interesting question. We cannot complete or end any conversation without talking about artificial intelligence. It's such a buzzword. And one point is AI has a great role. I mean, definitely, it's in the future. What I see currently, data analysis and other things, I have some personal interest in it, so, but work-wise, no, I couldn't do anything. But I have some personal interest, like predictive modeling. I have done a few predictive modeling, couldn't apply, but it's possible. But AI is highly used in many other sectors, like financial sectors, like investment sectors and other areas, and art, culture, these areas. But health technologies, advanced technologies, is in, if it comes to health, the privacy concern, uncertainty, and it deals with human lives. So application of any kind of AI, we need to be more careful, and it takes time. Careful means you're slow. So I am careful about my health data. So application of AI on my health information is definitely, it's a time, it's a thing that will take a little time. I sometimes apply for my own interest to go to artificial intelligence, not only ChatGPT, but different way of analysis. Like a small personal data, if I put it into the system and say, analyze it and give me the insight, what is it? Interestingly, AI gives me exactly correct information. If I talk about Gemini, if I talk about ChatGPT, if I talk about Copilot, things are helping us a lot. But health system-wise, there are two processes here. One is medical system, like treatment and other things, and the process, like where I work mostly, the system support system-wise, it has a role. In the treatment field, like medical field, definitely it's already been in use. Many doctors are trying to come up with some idea. Most probably, being a clinician, you have seen something called clinical decision support. So clinical decision support, there is a role of AI in there. Like one of the projects in many hospitals that you have, rescue from danger, most probably heard of that. Rescue from danger is intensive data involved in it, how a patient is responding to something, or patient's vital signs are analyzed. And if a patient is going towards somewhere, could be dangerous. So this kind of situation, AI can predict well in advance than a person. Because say, for example, you are in a hospital, you are looking after, say, today you are given, say, 10 patients. There are 3 patients serious and 7 patients are okay. You are taking a lot of attention to your 3 patients, less attention to your 7 patients. But in a situation, if you think that in a shift, you are getting 10 serious, critically ill patients, definitely you'll be exhausted in 1 hour of your shift, first hour of your shift. But AI, it doesn't, the tiredness is not there. It will not exhaust it. It will constantly monitor, and it will give you the information correctly. So most treatment or management, yeah, there are some algorithms, say, if it is yes, go this. If it is no, this, go. If the value is less than 32, then go there. If the value is less than 32. So these are the process in our brain when we support our patients. But yeah, brain has some capacity. If you have a shift with your mental status is affected by something like you couldn't sleep well last night, or you are disturbed by something, your brain function will be slow. But interestingly, AI works constantly at the same speed. And it works the way you want to work. I mean, the way you want to work, your brain may not work, your physics may not work, but AI will work. So AI has definitely potential in our healthcare system in delivering services, process improvement, and system-wise. Although it's been in use in some cases in medical treatment process, but in the system-wise, it'll take a bit of time to come up, but eventually we will be there with some. I mean, the way we are progressing one after another, we will be there when AI will be our assistant to improve the health system process.
I love it. Thank you for answering that. And you're right, AI is definitely a buzzword. But because it's such a buzzword, I had to touch on it. So I appreciate your answer. What drives your passion for health data?
Yeah, I go back to that theory of molecule. Molecule, I mean, that atom, like atom is the basis of everything we see, we touch, we feel. And data is the atom of everything we decide. In health system improvement, data is the atom. So what happens if when I feel like health is very important part where we are improving? Let me give you an example. This example is a little absolute. Years ago, it was said that in a decade or a century, we have improved our length of life by 25 years overall. I mean, length of life means like how many years on an average a person is living. So public health claim that of these 25 years, the 24 years part of the major part is given by public health because of the introduction of vaccine and preventative measure, communicable disease, non-communicable disease, where in every places public health has some role. Well, when I think about what it comes from the clinical service and public health service, what is the basis? And then a third component is the process, like system, like health system, like hospital itself, or the ministry, or the national health system. So what is the basis? The basis is actually data. That goes one step up with information that is consumed by everyone. The knowledge is consumed by specialists, and the wisdom is for very high-level people. And that goes to the decision-making process to the decision makers, like politicians, like bureaucrats, like whoever responsible person is that. So if I really want to contribute to the entire system, I thought our gap is still the gap is the data part. When I started my career, the data part was still a process where we need to improve a lot. We have improved a lot. Definitely, I say that people like me, I take a little bit of pride in it, that a lot of improvement happened. And it's not only me. There are thousands, millions of people like me working to improve health system. I met many brilliant persons in health sector, health system process, like how they are contributing to improve the health system. But everyone says it's data driven, and that's the basis of evidence-based medicine or evidence-based science and evidence-based decision making. So I wanted to touch the foundation of the entire process, which is data. And that's data and information interchangeably used. So I deal with data that is very close to information. Ultimately, it goes to decision-making process. I'm proud to be in that the bottom part of the process. If there's four steps, sorry, I work in the first and second step. And I support the entire system by providing efficient data so that they can make the decision and improve health of Canadians, health of Ontarians, health of everyone in this world.
Your passion definitely shines through as you're talking about it. Tell me a little bit about your involvement with CHIMA.
I mean, what I do, CHIMA is again health information management. Without that, I cannot do anything actually. So, say for example, when I was working with QBP, QBP is a quality-based procedure that is given by the ministry to the hospital, some hospitals for doing some certain procedures. The clinical definition is based on some codes. So that codes are given by health information management professionals. So without HIMSS, without CHIMA, I'm nowhere. So but my most works, like say for example, 70 to 80% of my works for the clinical side, there are some of my work, there are some financial side, there are some clinical side. So 70 to 80% of my work related to clinical process improvement is based on the coding process. That is CHIMA. So you can understand where I'm standing. So without CHIMA, I'm nowhere.
That's a very fair assessment. I've read, and you've also said that you've written a fair number of articles. What article are you most proud of and why?
I touched it. I mean, I wrote several articles, not a lot. I made some presentations in different conferences, but the most important part that I mentioned earlier about drive distance between the two postal codes, that's actually related to accident victims for intubation process. So in this paper, I have three components. One is analytical process, another one is clinical decision-making process for on-site support service providers. And number three is it improving that? Now, what is the impact on the patient? So clinical decision-making definitely is supporting the patient. So that presentation, I made it in Orlando in a conference with the SAS Global Conference. And I use the tool called SAS. It's a high-end statistical tool. And it has some capability to analyze the process, connect to database, and read through the big set of data. So as I mentioned, it's approximately 335,000 sets of postal codes. And it's quite intense work for several months. And I feel proud that I supported many public health schools, and I inspired them to think about that. It's not the actual content of that publication or of that presentation, it's the idea. So it was never thought that this could improve patient's health, but I came up with an idea that this is the way we can improve patient's health. And for many years, over many decades or over 100 years, we are relying on nearest hospital. Before the computer time, I asked one of the paramedics, that person said that before this computer time, they used to have a list of nearby hospitals with the distance and on a paper, they used that. And it was easy for them at that time. It's very easy. So in an area, if there's a five hospital from accident point, they can find out which is nearest. Now we use technology. Sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's not. But the accurate way is the drive distance. There are many road situations and drive distance has faster drive, like avoid some roads. There are some constructions and other things. The process that I have submitted in that paper with ideas that we can expedite the process of delivering service to our patients better than what we are doing now. That was the main message. There is no room for complacency. We can improve our existing process, and we can challenge our existing process so that we can improve what we are doing today. We can do better tomorrow.
I think that's a perfect place to stop, only because, you know, what you said there, it's not about the complacency. It's about, you know, taking something and using the data to make it better in the future. So thank you. Thank you so much for your time this morning. I appreciate it. I appreciate, you know, you answering the questions and sharing your knowledge and your passion with me.
Thank you very much. It was nice meeting you, Kelly. And I still feel like data is the atom. So if it gives you any message, that would be great. Data is the atom.
I love it.
So hopefully we will talk again. And if you have any question, come back to me. It was lovely talking to you. You are a great interviewer, definitely. I was interviewed several times, like Protostat took some interview, and when I was working with Kaihai, I was interviewed by 5 different magazines. It's a health information technology magazine. I don't know.
Right.
Someone named Victoria City, she took several interviews, and I have one of the printed magazines. And in our where I worked for the hospital, I created a publication, and they come up with an idea. Can I take? I said, don't talk about me. Talk about the system. I can give you some ideas. That's great. Yeah, I can do that. Thank you, Kelly. It was nice meeting
Thank
you.
Thank you. And, you too. Thank you, Ash. And I hope you have an amazing day. And with all your stickies in the background, I hope that there's a lot of molecules that are permeating back there. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
You too, Kelly. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.